This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I mean, there's so many things that go into this, into every energy source, and we just have to be aware of what the trade-offs are. And once you understand what the trade-offs are, then it becomes much more of like, yeah, there is no perfect solution.
It's the third element on the periodic table, but most of us don't know too much about it, besides that it's in electric car batteries. This week on Sea Change Radio, we welcome University of Southern California business professor Sean Hyatt to learn more about the lithium industry, how this mineral is mined, its importance to the energy and transportation sectors, and why lithium's market price has collapsed over the past few years. We use the enormous lithium deposits in Southern California's Salton Sea as a jumping-off point for a larger conversation about all things lithium, including the environmental impacts of its extraction. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Sean Hyatt. He's a professor at the University of Southern California Marshall School of Business, and he's the director of the Marshall Business of Energy Initiative. Sean, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
So you and your colleagues have been studying something that not only impacts Southern California, but the globe in a lot of ways, the Salton Sea. For listeners who aren't familiar with the area, give us an overview of the Salton Sea, and then we'll dive into some of the problems that are emerging from the region.
Okay, yeah. So the Salton Sea, well, the sea itself was actually created by a mistake, right? The diversion, where they're diverting the Colorado River for irrigation, the dikes broke, and the water flowed in, creating hence the Salton Sea, which is a very shallow lake in Imperial County, California.
I was reading about this and it said 1905 this was diverted through what you're talking about, but was there a body of water there already?
Yeah, it was just a desert and the dike broke and spilling Colorado River in, thereby filling in before they could actually get a hold of the water spill and turn it off. And so that's what's created the Salton Sea. What's interesting about the geology of the Salton Sea is that it has a lot of geothermal activity, meaning that there is heat from the earth that is close to the surface. And that heat from the earth can then be tapped to boil liquids, which can then be used to drive turbines. And these turbines then generate electricity. So the Salton Sea has had geothermal energy running there for a while, as many other parts of California. California has a large history. In fact, it was the first state in the country to develop geothermal energy up in the geysers region in Northern California. And the Salton Sea is just another extension of the geothermal development in the state of California.
And in addition to its geothermal, or maybe as a byproduct of its geothermal production, we're seeing this treasure trove, if you will, of lithium deposits.
Yeah, so there are different ways in which we can extract energy, but what's typically done is that they look for hot water that's in the ground, which they have identified in the Salton Sea. And in this hot water is many different types of elements that are dissolved in the water. And lithium is one of them. So we'd actually call this a brine because it's we call these salts. So wherever you have these different elements that are dissolved in water, we generally give the term of salts. And there is a large amount of lithium salts dissolved in this water, which is used as the medium to drive to these geothermal power plants. In fact, the estimates are there are 3,400 kilotons of lithium in that brine in the Salton Sea.
So this lithium extraction, what are the best ways to do it and what are some of the unhappy byproducts of the process?
So typically, if we look at how lithium has been extracted in the past, like in the lithium triangle region of Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile, it's essentially been using lithium that has in dried up lake beds. And so they would scrape up the dried up earth. They would then run water through it to dissolve the lithium and make it a salt. And then they would just run these water into different types of pools, letting the sun, because these are very dry and hot regions, evaporate the water. And then they would run water in again and evaporate it again until they get a more purified lithium salt in like a white powdery form, which they would then send for further processing to make it into the lithium needed for batteries. Now, what makes this different in this case is that this isn't, and it's not in a dry composition, right? It's not something that's mined from the earth with shovels. This is lithium that's already dissolved in water. And so, hence the mining techniques need to change. And so what's been developed is what's called direct lithium extraction, DLE. And there are two ways to do it. There is one where the lithium salts are passed through these membranes, right? So think of it as like almost like a desalinization reverse osmosis, right? We've been doing this for a while, but there are specific membranes for the size of the lithium. And they're able to catch the lithium salts through these membranes. Another way is through like a polymer. So they create these different types of polymers which attract the lithium, and then they then extract the polymers out. These are small polymer chemicals. Right, so these are the two technologies that are being used right now today to extract lithium in what's called direct lithium extraction. And so these are the technologies that they are also using and experimenting with in the Salton Sea. Now, one issue with the Salton Sea, unlike other areas where direct lithium extraction has had more success, and I'd love to compare this also with the Smackover region that runs through Arkansas and Mississippi, as well as parts of Texas and Florida. The water here is extremely hot. And so that does complicate things a bit, meaning that it may be more costly to use, to develop the types of membranes to extract it at these high temperatures that will not degrade. The same with like using these different polymers. So it's not the best area to do direct lithium extraction. Even though there is a lot of lithium in the water, for that reason, I'm actually more bullish on the Smackover region in around Arkansas, because there's a lot of lithium in this brine, and it's just regular cold water temperature. So there's not too much needed, additional innovation needed to extract that lithium there.
So there was a case that just was decided by a Superior Court judge about the Hell's Kitchen mining. It gave them the green light in 2025 to move forward. What were the environmental groups suing for, and what are the concerns in direct lithium extraction? I mean, from what you just described, that sounded fairly benign, but the opponents to the mine, what were their reservations?
Their main concerns were air quality and water. Availability and water supply. So let's just address the water. One thing that they were concerned about is that as they extract the water from the ground, right, how's this going to affect the water table and the water supply that's there? Because, I mean, as you know, whenever you extract anything from the ground, there can be things can subside. The ground can sink. It happens here in Los Angeles as they pumped out more and more oil out of, like, say, the city of Long Beach. I mean, the city of Long Beach actually fell a few feet over the century of pumping oil out. The same thing can happen here, as they're worried about. But what they don't understand is that this water is in a closed loop. So they're actually re-injecting it into the aquifer. After it runs through the geothermal power plant, it's a very circular route. There is no massive water evaporation. The idea is that once it runs through the geothermal power plants, some of that water will be diverted to the direct lithium extraction. And then after they collect the lithium, the water is then re-injected into the ground. Hence, no surprise that the Superior Court judge didn't find any merit in that after all the information and details were presented. The other was air quality. The air in Imperial County is really bad. Let's just put it that way. It's very bad. Why? Because it's very dry and there are a lot of fine particulate matter that gets blown from the ground everywhere. And so what they were concerned about is through all the traffic and trucks and the equipment, right, that it would have a negative impact on the air quality. And so companies obviously would want to do their best to remediate the any type of like air quality concerns in Imperial County, which is already very bad. But yes, the judge in effect approved it in January of 2025 to move forward.
I'm so happy, 'cause today found my friends are in my head. I'm so ugly, that's okay, 'cause so are you. Book of Mirrors, Sunday morning is every day for all I care. And I'm not scared, light my candles in our days, 'cause I found God.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Professor Sean Hyatt. He's the director of the Marshall Business of Energy Initiative at USC, University of Southern California. So, Sean, what is the problem with hydrogen sulfide in the Salton Sea?
So anytime, and this is actually typical too, of any time you're pulling something out of the ground, I mean, oil and gas companies face the same situation when they're pulling it up, saying methane or oil, you get hydrogen sulfide. Which is a product of just the breakdown of organic material. You know, it smells like rotten eggs. So really the hydrogen sulfide in terms of health effects is much more on the smell than it is on like actual problems. It's just whenever you have decaying matter in an anaerobic type of decay, whether it happens in the Salton Sea underwater, which a lot of this is happening from the Salton Sea.
Which is basically a huge stagnant lake, right? It doesn't have an outflow or an inflow point.
That is right, yes. Or, I mean, if there is, you know, hydrogen sulfide coming from the geothermal facilities, which, you know, they make the claim, but I would like to see the evidence of whether that is the case. I don't know whether that's the case. I do know that in extraction industries, it can be a product. But if you kind of understand how the geothermal power works, right, this water is usually in a closed tube. There's no exposure to the air. Now, that could be an issue as they do the direct lithium extraction if there is any type of air exposure, and hydrogen sulfide may be present in that water and may be emitted through the DLE. And that's something that we need to examine. But I think that's what the constituents are worried about, because right now they're smelling a lot of it from the Salton Sea itself. And so then that makes them wonder, well, could this geothermal and the direct lithium extraction also contribute to it? And that's still to be seen.
So you mentioned the Smackover region in Arkansas and top part of that state in terms of its potential for lithium extraction. 10 years ago, we were thinking about lithium as being a very rare mineral, and we were looking at shortages similar to what we're hearing from a mineral that you've written extensively about, copper. So we have this copper shortage, and we were viewing lithium like this a decade ago, and all of a sudden it seems like lithium prices have come down. Is that because of the extraction technology improving, or is it more lithium fines?
It's a supply and demand issue, and I'm glad you brought this up, because lithium prices have collapsed essentially over 90% over the last 5 years. In fact, they're down to prices that are pretty close to what they were in 2021. At these prices, I doubt it's going to be profitable for extraction in the Salton Sea because of the high costs of doing business in the state of California, as well as using that hotter water temperature, which requires more innovation for the extraction. That is why, look, and like, just as you said before, like in terms of like the supply, we are well supplied for lithium. Now that we've identified it in all these different brines, such as the Smackover region, as well as now in Quebec, they found a large find as well. Volkswagen just signed a major deal for like 100,000 tons of lithium with a Canadian company there to supply for their battery needs. So lithium is not what I would call now one of these like rare, it's not a rare earth, it's pretty abundant, and it's now available in many different parts. The reason the price collapsed so much recently was because the price went up because of there was hype around the electrification and the use of electric vehicles, particularly around 2022 when the Inflation Reduction Act also came out and everyone was saying, yes, you know, the future is electric. We will no longer have internal combustion engines. Well, that kind of fell through, especially in 2023, 2024, when it became apparent that, you know, all these electric vehicles were produced, but now people are not buying them. And so the market on that end started collapsing, which then caused the price to collapse too, because it was built on future anticipations of the demand for lithium. That has not been realized. So we're seeing the price now look back to what it was in about 2021 on the realization or the realistic expectations of demand for lithium for batteries. But now as we get more supply on the market, right, which may come up through Smackover, which I'll talk about in a second, right, the price may continue to go down. So this is why and where are we going to see the lithium develop? I am more bullish for the Smackover, not just because of the way the lithium is stored in like this cold water brine, but because of the companies that are actually investing in it. So like we got Chevron, we have ExxonMobil. These are energy giants who have massive amounts of cash on hand. They can extract, develop the technologies for lithium and run it at a loss because they can. If you look at the players in the Salton Sea, except for maybe Berkshire Energy, which is a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway, those are startups. And they're standalone companies like Standard Lithium, right? These companies don't have have this cash flow on the side from, say, oil and gas to keep their operations running as they develop the technologies. And then they require a particular price point of lithium to even break even. So my bet on lithium extraction in the United States is predominantly with these large oil energy major companies running in the Smackover. They've got a history of using lithium. In fact, the lithium battery was actually invented by Mobil, one of the parent companies, ExxonMobil, back in the 70s in their New Jersey laboratories. So they do have a history in this chemical of using lithium, and their anticipation is they're going to invest in it no matter what the price is, because looking to the future, as oil and gas becomes much more scarce resource, so say like 50 years from now, as more ground transportation adopts electrified vehicles, there's going to be greater demand for lithium.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Sean Hyatt. He's a professor at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. So, Sean, if you were teaching a class in business ethics or and climate change and the salt and sea was a module, what are some of the ethical questions that you might pose students?
So I don't teach an ethics class, Alex, but what I do teach is a global strategy class and the business of energy in the 21st century. And in both of those classes, we talk about this. And it's important to understand that any investment in energy requires a return, right? So there has to be a return that a company is going to make on this. Those returns are affected by the stakeholders that could be infected or impacted by your business operations. And so that's something that the businesses are actually cognizant of, and they work to mitigate it. And we talk a lot in my classes, like what are ways to anticipate the potential negative externalities of your business operations and to work with the stakeholders at play. And this is particularly important on any energy project, because any energy project is extremely capital intensive and has an impact. Think of hydropower dams, right? They have a big ecological impact. We cannot deny that, right? But at the same time, they produce an energy source, right, that with the reservoirs can basically run all the time, a nice baseload energy that's relatively cheap, right? And if you care about carbon emissions, well, there are none after the dam is completed. So everything has a trade-off with the energy. We talk about that in my class. And then, of course, based on that, it's all then about what's the market going to support? And then if you decide to invest, then there's a return. How can you work with stakeholders to mitigate those negative externalities, whether it be like the air quality issue in the Salton Sea that they're complaining about or the water issues?
Well, what about if you were not a business owner in this class and there was a group of four or five students who were tasked with running the Sierra Club or an environmentally focused nonprofit? Where do they put their energies? Should they be trying to slow the production of lithium? How should they be approaching something like the Salton Sea and its lithium extraction?
I suspect that they approach their topics based on what their donors want.
But their donors don't necessarily know what they want, especially when there's so many different environmental issues to be hot and bothered by and well-informed about.
Maybe they don't. But, you know, every group has, like, their issues that they care about, right? And good for them, right? That's just fine. That's what they want to advocate for. One of the things that I do in our initiative is, like, we, and this is what I also teach my class, is try to understand that every energy source has a trade-off. And we need to be adults in the room and understand what these trade-offs are. And as long as we're okay with those trade-offs, right, and we all understand them, then that's fine, right? But I think that's one of the problems with today in the world is that energy has become a politicized aspect where people say, oh, this is clean, this is green. Well, what does that really mean? And you mentioned, oh yeah, well, the lithium batteries, I mean, they're absolutely clean. Boy, we didn't consider the cobalt mining using child labor in the Congo, right? Or
right.
The massive amounts of like copper extraction. I mean, there's so many things that go into this, into every energy source. And we just have to be aware of what the trade-offs are. And once you understand what the trade-offs are, then it becomes much more of like, yeah, there is no perfect solution.
I would maybe challenge your framing of it in that you're looking at the stakeholders from a company like the shareholders of ExxonMobil as their motives are to maximize profits and also mitigate externalities like pollution, while it seemed a little cynical that you're saying that the environmental groups are only going to be chasing issues that their big donors care about. That seemed a little like a jaundiced view to me.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. And maybe they're also pursuing interests that they think that matter to them. And that's just fine with me as well. Everybody has their different interests and things that they really care about that they could be passionate about. And that's to be expected. So, I mean, there's groups out there that care about fish.
Ultimately, we use terms like donors or stakeholders, but they're all people with vested interests, right?
Exactly. Yes. But one thing you got to be clear about, and this is the thing that we have to come into this conversation knowing, is that energy is the key to all innovation and to the wonderful and incredible way of life that we enjoy right now, especially in this country, the United States. Without cheap, so let's say affordable and reliable energy, right, we would not be having the technology that we're using even today, right? So this is like the key foundation of every society is cheap energy. You can go back in time. The Industrial Revolution was started because the invention of the steam machine using coal, right? And through that energy of fossil fuels, of coal, we were able to develop and get through the Industrial Revolution. Then petroleum came around, right? And then we figured out, oh, wow, nuclear came about. And then we developed other ways of generating electricity. And so that the progress, it continues forward. But one thing we always have to remember is that we need to have and maintain a balance across this. And one of the things I teach in my class is, like, if you want to create value, because business is all about creating value, especially in the energy sector, you need to balance five factors: energy security, safety, reliability, affordability, and cleanliness. And if you can balance these, like, five different factors, right, then you're going to actually be creating value, and you're going to be able to actually sell your products, and people are going to want to buy it. So that those are kind of like the five major factors that need to be balanced in every type of energy system. If you don't have that, then there's going to be problems. And that's going to have a negative impact, like a domino effect on sectors in the economy at large. One thing I would like to note too is that what we're seeing in the United States, and since 2023 really, is a renaissance in interest in nuclear energy. And this is largely driven by the demand by data center companies for reliable power.
Yes, I saw that Microsoft bought Three Mile Island just for its data center. It's an insane amount of energy that it requires.
Exactly. So we've hit a turning point. Up until 2022, everything was about ESG, limiting carbon emissions. We could run the world on, like, wind and solar alone, right? Then Ukraine got invaded. Europe lost its cheap Russian gas. And everything turned on its head, and people started focusing on, okay, instead of cleanliness, maybe we got to go back to, remember, we need energy security and reliability, right? These are factors we totally took for granted, and now we need to focus on this. And then, in November 30th, 2022, ChatGPT gets released. And what do we see? We see massive amounts of capital investment by data centers and vertically integrated, what we call hyperscalers, like Google and Meta and Microsoft, who are investing in data centers using GPUs, which use 10 times as much energy as a CPU data center. And what they're finding is there's not enough power in this country now. We don't have enough electrons. And they need the power, and they're willing to get it anywhere, but they also want to balance at the electrons, energy reliability, with also energy cleanliness. So if you zoom in and see at the intersection of those two, we're looking at reliability and cleanliness is like nuclear, geothermal, right? These are the two big areas where I see growth, huge growth opportunities in the United States. And this is where you're seeing the capital go right now. So moving forward, keep your eye on nuclear and geothermal in the United States. This is a renaissance in both of these two industries.
He's a professor at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business, Sean Hyatt. Sean, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Sidewinder, Nirvana, and Sting.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.